Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, good day. It's John Beener. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Inspiration 316. Hey, we're going to inspire with some good news today. Things that are happening in the world of Shark Tank. If you ever heard of Shark Tank, that's a television show that's on. It's been on, I think, at least 8-9 different years. The Mark Burnett really brought it to America. It was started, actually, in Japan called Dragon Den, and then went to Canada. Actually, it's a couple of the people that are on the show today were on that original show in Canada. But anyway, it's been a big hit. Changed the name to Shark Tank, and it's about inspiring people in business and helping them raise capital, get their act together, know what they're doing. You know, God is in the midst of all of this. Hey, if you're looking for the bad news, hey, we don't have any of that. We just share the good news. Yeah, we take some of the bad stories and turn it into good stories because God is in the midst of taking evil and turning it into good. Thanks for joining us again. John Beener with Inspiration 316. We're talking about the show Shark Tank today. Actually, everybody who's been in business has gone through ups and downs and struggles. I went through trying to start a business when I was, I guess, about 26 or 27. Had a vision for an idea, tried to get patented, didn't get it patented. Started a retail business just a few years later, and after a year of that, closed it down, found out I had a great idea, but didn't have the economics together right. Wanted to start another business years later, eventually did that. God led me to a business that rocked my world, changed my life, and many other people's lives as well. And that was working with CEOs and entrepreneurs. So God is in the midst of all of these things and activities. You don't have to be a committed Christian to have a successful business, but you do have to ultimately follow, if you want to sustain it, ultimately you have to follow God's principles. His grace will allow for stupid things, mistakes, and even sin for different periods of times until his grace periods end. But the secret to the kingdom of God is found in the parable of the sower, and that's where Jesus said the seed fell on the beaten down path, and the birds and the devil came and took it away. The rock seed fell on the rocky soil. It was people tried it for a while, and they gave up because the soil wasn't strong enough, and then eventually thorny soil, and then good soil. God is using that parable as a progression and changing lives. It's the most repeated parable in the whole New Testament, and it's inspiring if you really dig into the depth of what it's all about. But let's go ahead. We're going to start here with Shark Tank, talking about the reeling, some of the, asking them what are some of the biggest deals that they've made in the Shark Tank and their success. Listen to some of their stories.
Remember the ugly Christmas sweater company, Tipsy Elves?
Welcome to the Tipsy Elves Fashion Show.
This stuff is hideous.
They surprised the sharks by selling wacky and clever holiday attire.
Last year, we had $862,000 in sales.
And now they're expanding into new frontiers.
We've created a lot of new styles, and we're ready to meet the demand this year.
Tipsy Elves reports $40 million in sales. One of Robert's top investments on the show.
Our company is Tom and Chi.
Let's feed some to Barbara and see if she lives.
Barbara not only lived, she invested in the grilled cheese restaurant called Tom and Chi.
Everything in my bones are saying this is a runaway hit.
It's now expanded to 18 franchises across 14 states. Total sales so far, a reported $47 million.
I'm John, and this is my partner, Wambi.
It's been just 14 months since Kevin felt the love for the 3D greeting card company, Love Pump.
We're tapping into something much bigger, the human need to connect.
I was the most nervous at that point over any other time in my life.
What's yours, Barbara?
Real estate, of course, but his is money.
Since then, their company's reported growth from 300,000 in sales to more than 8 million. Kevin says his initial investment has been returned tenfold.
He should be very excited.
But you are the doctor of...
I am the doctor of love.
And this was the company that knocked Damon's socks off.
Our company is Bombas, and we're here today seeking $200,000 in exchange for a 5% equity stake.
In season 6, Randy Goldberg and David Heath pitched their sock company and got a lot of heat from Kevin.
You guys are still sock cockroaches.
Sock cockroaches. He sure did. Oh, man, this guy. I mean, Kevin, like, put our socks on his hands and was making sock puppet.
That was good.
I'm going to talk to you guys, and you're going to talk to me.
Damon invested in the company.
Great decision.
And in 2.5 years, they say they've made well over $20 million in sales.
Shark Tank is gasoline. It just lights up.
Let me ask you about the notoriously bad pitches.
My company is,
Can you tell us more about it?
It's so easy. You can do it with your friends. You can do it with your child.
He starts fumbling from the moment he gets out there.
Oh, my God, I have a headache.
I forgot my first two to three minute pitch and just froze.
What is your product?
We develop a brand of stand-up paddleboards.
And they started making fun of me. I got called a nerd.
I think you should stick with being a nerd.
In fact, we heard Kevin say,
"Don't worry, it's only your biggest moment in your life."
Really nice of you,
Kevin. I think it's good to put the pressure on because that's when
you
shine.
To be one of my best deals.
You bet it was one of his best deals. While most of the sharks were out for blood.
You have failed to get your message across, and I'm listening with both ears wide open.
Don't listen to a word she said.
Mark threw Stefan Arstall's paddleboard company a lifeline.
I'm willing to give you $150,000 for 30% of the company.
So let's do it.
Woo! Whoa, did not see that coming.
I did not see that coming.
The result? A reported $25 million in sales.
He's returned my money, you know, 12, 15 times over already.
Lots of money made for the sharks, but what is the daddy of all deals? Two words, scrub daddy.
Lori has this little sponge, and she's claiming, scrub I don't believe daddy. Her, that she's doing $80 million, and that's what she claims. Right, so I think
I don't believe her
at all.
I believe her.
Why would I believe her?
According to Lori Grenier, that number is even higher.
In just 4 years, we have hit $110 million in retail sales.
That would make this smiley-faced sponge the ultimate Shark Tank success story.
It's like the Post-it. You're like, I use it every day.
Yeah. But remember, those are the best. The ones where I walk in, you say, why didn't I think of that?
Every morning, I wake up with a new vengeance to make sure that no one takes our title as the most successful item in the history of the show.
But there is another business nipping at its tail.
Introducing the Simply Fit Board.
When mother-daughter team Linda Clark and Gloria Hoffman pitched their exercise board to the Sharks last year, Gloria said she had $52 in her bank account.
You look like two old men out.
Linda, I'm getting dizzy. Stop that.
The team paired with Lori to create an infomercial in several languages.
Par jour avec la planche Simply Fit. Board.
And distributed it internationally.
Soy Lori Grenier de Shark Tank.
Hola, soy Lori Grenier.
She may be selling it, and I don't know if she's making money. I'm sure she's selling a lot because the commercials keep on running, but that doesn't make it a good product. Sorry, Lori.
Oh, you're jealous.
The bottom line is
Mark, if she's selling it, how is it not a good product? You can do the hokey pokey for 12 hours a day. That doesn't mean you're going to be Simply Fit.
The bottom line, it's been simply successful.
When something changes your life, it's a crying moment.
Simply Fit Board's reported retail sales have hit $96 million in just 15 months. And remember Gloria, who only had $52 in her bank account? She just bought a luxury home for her and her two boys. With cash.
It truly is the American dream. Overnight, my whole life changed.
So what's so remarkable about Shark Tank for me is watching the level playing field of the show. There are no barriers to entry. You walk in, you make your pitch.
But I need a little help. That's where you guys come in.
Everybody's equal, and some people leave with their dream funded.
You have a deal.
And some people don't.
I'm out.
But you know, Elizabeth, it's hard. And it should be hard. But the great thing about us is I think none of us see race, color, sex. We just see, are
green.
These people adding value?
Good idea.
The carpet is the ultimate equalizer.
We just see green.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking about Shark Tank. You know, those are all the peak. Kevin O'Leary, of course, who's Mr. Wonderful, but actually he's Mr. Bad. He is the Donald Trump of the Shark Tank show. Says the brashest things, dumbest things sometimes, and puts people down. Mark Cuban is the guy who owns the Dallas Mavericks basketball team, made lots of money, very arrogant, thinks he knows it all. Robert Havlicek, he's an immigrant from Czech. His parents went to Canada and then they immigrated to the States as well. But he's been kind of shrewd investor. And then there is Barbara Corcoran. She's a real estate investor. We'll hear more about her a little later. Lori Grenier, she's been the queen of the shows on TV where they advertise, and I'm trying to remember what they call those things, but the, not infomercials, but the other television shows that they have there. It's selling items all the time. Wife watches the show. And then Damon John, he is the African-American guy from FUVU, who's his company is out of New York City, and they've been phenomenal there. It's over $1 billion companies in several areas, primarily apparel things. But he even came to town. I had a talk with him once real briefly. He did a seminar that I participated in with some other people. And neat guy, down to earth, all these people. And they care about business. And that means that ultimately they care about the Lord, because God is in the midst of doing business through people, with people. God is there helping people with ideas, and that's what I call the secret to the kingdom of God. God's giving visions, unctions, and leadings to people, and they say, oh, what a great idea, but I can't do that. That's in the midst of the beaten down path because their head is so negative and thinking, and they have fear all over them and can't rejection. I've done that. Everybody's done that to some point, but the idea is to get through the stages of growth that the secret to the kingdom talks about in the parable of the sower. And that's again in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Look it up. Let's go to another segment here, the top 10 rejected Shark Tank pitches that became successful. Listen to some of this.
Number 10, Proof Eyewear.
Entrepreneurs like us don't grow on trees, even though the majority of our products do.
Hindsight is always 20/20. When the three Dame brothers from Idaho pitched their idea for Proof Eyewear, one-of-a-kind glasses frames crafted from wood. The concept itself impressed the sharks. Though the brothers presented some impressive numbers for a fairly new company, only sharks Robert and Kevin offered deals, both of which the brothers refused.
We're about making this thing go, and we want to build it with a good partner that supports us and wants to see this thing be successful.
After the show, Proof used the wood trend to its advantage, almost tripling their sales shortly afterwards, and continuing to grow and build their brand. After all, what's more appealing than being eco-friendly and stylish? Number 9, Cell Helmet.
Basically, the way it works is when
I hate your business model so much, I have to punish you. I just don't know how.
It's a profitable venture.
Even billionaires drop their phones sometimes. To avoid the problem of smashed phone screens, David Artuso and Mike Kane came up with an idea for a tougher phone case, as well as a guaranteed repair or replacement if the phone broke while within it.
Are we magicians? Not at all. We just happen to be the only company on Earth who's bundling our protective accessories with a safety net of accidental damage coverage.
Unfortunately, the sharks weren't biting. Predicting that bigger companies with larger budgets would pounce on the idea as soon as Cell Helmet became big, it didn't take long for the investors to scatter. But upon arriving home, the two founders immediately discovered that their inbox was filled with offers from other investors. These days, Cell Helmet can be purchased at over 3,000 wireless stores across the United States.
It's time for you to get on the boat. And it's with heavy heart that I set it afire and float it out to the tank.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate your time.
Number 8, Coffee Meets Bagel.
Sharks, I know what you're thinking. It's another dating site.
These sisters said it themselves. It's yet another dating site. However, the idea behind the app, which allows users to meet potential dates through mutual friends on social media, was unique enough that it sparked a huge offer from shark Mark Cuban. $30 million for the entire company.
Let me ask you a question. If I offered you $30 million for the company, would you take it?
No.
The sisters refused, preferring to keep the company for themselves. Though the offer itself fell through, seeing the interest from Cuban drew other investors to the app once the show aired. Enjoying massive amounts of marketing exposure and investor interest, the app continues to grow and make its mark in the world of online dating.
Well, you buy it. You buy the mystery, right?
It's the mystery. A lot of people want to know, how am I connected to this person?
Number 7, Lip Bar.
Our messaging is empowerment.
Breaking into the beauty industry isn't an easy thing to do, but these two makeup artists were determined. Pitching their all-natural and extensively colored line of lipsticks, entrepreneurs Melissa Butler and Roscoe Spears managed to impress the Sharks with the quality of their product.
Where are you making these?
Actually make them by hand myself.
You make them by hand?
Yes, I didn't have...
At home?
Yes.
However, the duo's weak numbers and confused marketing strategy had the Sharks bowing out. Apparently, magazines like Cosmopolitan and Ebony thought otherwise, however, as the two have enjoyed coverage from both and have launched their own mobile lip bar tour to further spread their brand.
It's tough to pitch a lipstick company to a group of 4 guys. It's almost impossible.
Number 6, Rocketbook.
Wow. What are you selling to Martians?
People love it. It's fun.
Making it to number 1 on Amazon is every developer's dream. And these two managed to do it without the Shark's help. Pitching their idea for a reusable digital notebook that was reset by putting it in the microwave, entrepreneurs Jake Epstein and Joe LeMay claim to have a revolutionary idea on their hands.
There's a lot of engineering that has gone into the construction of a microwave-safe notebook.
However, not only did the Sharks not see an opportunity with the product, they laughed the duo off the show, right into the arms of success. Shortly after airing, Epstein and LeMay reported earnings of over $10 million. And the Rocketbook was Amazon's number 1 best-selling notebook in November 2016. Number 5. Zero Shoes.
Zero Shoes are a high-tech version of mankind's favorite footwear since 15,000 BC.
Even with the Shark's expert financial advice, sometimes you might be able to see your company's potential better than they ever could. After pitching an ultra-minimal sandal for either day-to-day or running use, Steven Sashin and Lena Phoenix predicted that their product was worth $5 million. Calling the sandals nothing more than, quote, rubber and a string, the Sharks scattered. But the money soon started rolling in. In the week after the show aired, Zero Shoes managed to sell the same amount they usually sold in 3 months. The sandals might be simple, but they sell.
They've somehow captured the essence of an athlete.
Number 4, Ring, also known as DoorBot.
So your voice comes out of it?
Your voice comes out of it. It's got a microphone and speaker, like, so it's two-way audio, one-way video.
The Sharks aren't the only investors prowling the waters. Originally named DoorBot, this product kickstarted a new type of smart home security. It's a doorbell equipped with a camera that streams footage to your smartphone.
Think of it as caller ID for your front door.
After rejection from most of the Sharks and a declined offer, the product attracted other huge investors, including Richard Branson, Goldman Sachs, and Qualcomm Ventures. Developer Jamie Siminoff has since rebranded the DoorBot into the Ring app and continues to expand and create new products for his line. Good thing he opened the door when opportunity came knocking.
Which makes this the perfect device to monitor your front door.
Number 3, Chef Big Shake, also known as CBS Foods.
Our flagship product is the original shrimp burger.
Here's a burger for everyone's taste nowadays. Turkey, beef, veggie, vegan, shrimp. Wait, what was that last one? When Chef Sean Davis came into the tank and proposed his idea of shrimp burgers, the Sharks were all about the taste, but not about the valuation of the company.
I don't think your whole company is worth $200,000 to $300,000 today.
Leaving with no offer on the table, but plenty of praise for the food itself, Davis went home to a hero's welcome and another investor who granted a better offer than what he had originally asked for. Now selling his burgers in over 2,000 grocery stores and predicting over $5 million in upcoming growth, Davis's appetite for business has not slowed down.
Well over $1 million in sales, projected to do about $5 million.
Get out!
Yes.
That is amazing.
Awesome,
30 grand
awesome.
To a brother.
Awesome feeling.
Seriously?
Awesome feeling. Yes, ma'am.
That is amazing stuff, isn't it? These are all stories of people's ideas that got rejected. The one, Ring App, and I don't know that that's the actual name of the company I'm thinking of, but it is big time. It has been, I think, even hundreds of millions of sales already. And it's flying out the door because it's about the door. You have a camera on your front door, you know, with a doorbell tied in it and an audio, and you can access it from your phone anywhere in the country. That thing is going like hotcakes. God is in the midst of growing people in their strength, their abilities, and all those. Here's Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, the bad guy, talking about some of the best and worst deals that he made. Listen to some of his comments.
What accounts for Shark Tank's popularity? Why has it become such a phenomenon?
That is a great question that every network executive, advertising agent, producer is trying to figure out. I have my own theory, and I'll tell you what it is. What are you watching when you watch Shark Tank? You're watching the pursuit of freedom. What does it mean to be wealthy? You're free. That's the dream of every entrepreneur. It's not about the greed of money. It's the ability to set your time for yourself and your family and the causes you believe in. And even a 9-year-old girl understands that if their family can come up with a product or service that's a success in America, you become free. It's the form of what the definition of wealth is. It's visceral. It's powerful. You can't stop watching it because the pursuit of it is challenging. You know, it's the probability of being successful is low, but you don't stop trying. That's the nature of what an entrepreneur is. And I think it's captured an amazing time in America when we went through the turmoil of 2008, 2009. Young people today realize that you have just as much risk working for a large corporation than you do starting your own, except the outcomes are so much different. If you're going to take a chance at being fired, let it be at your own hand. Start your own company. And today I spend a lot of time, particularly with graduating cohorts of engineers, which are my favorite to teach, trying to get a third of the class not to work for anybody, to start a company. Because we're in a global fight here in America. We do about 45, 49,000 engineers a year. China does 250,000. And they're not bad engineers over there anymore. Those guys are coming to kick butt. And we have to respond. And so I'm trying to get more people involved in being an entrepreneur.
You know, my mother gave me the advice one time, which I didn't follow. I've worked for two companies that have been very good places to work. I've worked for large corporations. But she said, go to work for yourself. I'm going to give you one piece of advice about your career. I didn't follow it, but I've done all right. But at any rate, you talk about business as a tool that leads you to freedom,
yeah.
Meaning that you get to a point where you don't have to answer the phone if you don't want to.
Right.
But along the path to that freedom, it is really anything but freedom, isn't it? I mean, you are really a captive to that business. It is not a 9-to-5 job if you're running your own company. It's 24/7.
That's a very intuitive statement, and it's very correct. And so what people have to realize that entrepreneurship is not for everybody, because you're really talking about sacrifice, Tyler. And the truth is, if you talk to most entrepreneurs that have been successful, and I spend a fair amount of time around them now, everybody talks about the days where they worked 23, 24, 25 hours a day. They never went to sleep. They never saw their families. And that's the sacrifice that you're going to have to give up, because there's someone else competing with you somewhere in the world today and working just as hard. But you're right. It's not a balance. There's no balance in life. I have a story that I'll tell you now about an evening class I taught recently. And it sums the whole thing up for people in here considering this path in their lives. Young guy, graduating cohort of business school. At the end of the class, it was about 9 o'clock. Class ends at 9. He hadn't said anything. The cohort was maybe about 160 people in the room. It was a big class. And he puts up his hand and said, listen, Mr. O'Leary, I'd like to ask you a question. I need some advice here. I founded a software services company on the cloud here in the dorm where I'm living. I'm going to graduate next year. I sell compliance software to hedge funds that manage less than $250 million. It's a niche. I'm making about $5 million a year in revenue. And I'm thinking, what's the problem? This is incredible. And you're still in school. He built something very unique for him. And you know what I'm talking about. Compliance is a real nightmare for these guys now. Mm-hmm. That wasn't his problem. He said, this morning I woke up and my fiance came over and talked to me and said, listen, I can't live like this anymore. You never spend any time with me. You don't come to visit my family. Last weekend, you didn't even show up at my family's annual picnic. I can't live like this. And he said, what do I do? I'm planning on marrying this woman. I said, okay, let's be pragmatic. Which is easier to replace? Your business? I mean, I'm not kidding. Your business or this woman that doesn't understand the journey you're on? Because if she doesn't get it, she's the wrong partner. And so, the class didn't end till 10 o'clock because clearly there was a new debate going on. And I think it's a healthy debate to have with yourself and your partner. Entrepreneurship is a really tough journey. And if the people around you don't understand it and you're contemplating making them your partner for life, that's the wrong partner.
You give a whole new meaning to the idea of a sentimental guy.
Again, that's Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, the guy that makes all the brash statements and criticizes people to their face, you know, no tact much of the time. Actually, we're going to play a clip here in the second half of the show where he is really touched by the comments that somebody makes on the show. And so he has a heart. His heart is in his pocketbook, I think, a lot of the time. Of course, it's really not about freedom. It's about accomplishment. That's what God is pushing us toward. All right, we can take a break here. We'll be back soon. This is Candy Pearson. He leadeth me. We'll see you soon.
On I-295 going north at the Collins Road exit ramp, look out for a broken down car. I-10 headed in the direction of downtown at Forest, we're looking at an accident this afternoon. And 295 south from Butler Boulevard to Bay Meadows, there are lots of cars on the highway. It's clear and cold tonight. Overnight, the low will be 39. Sunny tomorrow and a high of 61.
Welcome back. It's John Bean here with Inspiration 316. Thanks for joining us today. We've been featuring Shark Tank, amazing television show. It's been on, I think, 8 or 9 different years. Again, we talked about how we got started. But I want to tell you a little bit about a special rally we've got coming up February the 11th at the Village Bread Cafe on Phillips Highway from 12 to 1:30. Come get some lunch. Join us for this particular meeting. You can eat while we talk and share. We're going to have a lot of testimonies there. You could be one of the testimonies too. If you can come with a 5-minute testimony, we'll record it. We may be able to get it on the air as well. And then we're going to talk and be sponsored by Christian Healing Ministry, MediShare, Lifeblood Ministry, which is the new technology out of Germany. All these things that we'll be sharing with each other together. There may be 10 of us or there may be 50 of us. I'm not sure. But you're welcome to come. No charge, of course. And I want to acknowledge, celebrate, get your input, ideas for Inspiration 316, how to make it a better show, and how to use testimonies to change people's lives and witness to others. So love to have you come. Participate February 11th again from 12 to 1:30. At the Village Bread Restaurant on Phillips Highway, just across from the Walmart. It's a new location for the Village Bread, but they have excellent food there. It's a good place to be. It'll be a fun event to have you there and share what's your input. All right, we're getting back to Shark Tank again. The key people on the show, Kevin O'Leary, Mark Cuban, Robert Herjavec, Barbara Corcoran, Lori Grenier, and Damon John. Outstanding people, wealthy people, of course. How did they get there? They had troubles. They went through failures. I talked about it in the first part of the show, the failures that I had before I had my first business really become a significant success. Listen to what Barbara Corcoran has to say about her business and what she learned from failure. Listen in.
I was sent back to the second grade classroom one day after school, and I knew the moment I walked in that I was in trouble. There was Sister Stella Marie standing there. She was a nun from hell.
There was also Ellen Maloney, that all the kids at school call the retarded girl. And there was Rudy Valentino, not the famous guy, but Rudy Valentino, the Italian kid that just came off the boat, as we said. And I was asked to have a seat. When Sister Stella Marie told me if I didn't learn to pay attention, I would always be stupid, that was the day I first discovered that I had a label, and it was about failure. My idea of hell, to this day, is being asked to read out loud, to have the shame that you feel reading out loud. And in a situation where an education whole system judges a child's intelligence simply based on how well they could read or write to certain abilities. I learned how to be a loser. And I couldn't wait to get out of that jailhouse that everybody loved at school. I couldn't wait till the day I got out of it. And so when I grew up, I continued to learn a lot about failure, but frankly, I realized that that was the best calling card for the rest of my life, because nothing was going to feel as bad as that for me ever again. All of my singular, phenomenal successes that helped me build my business happened on the heels of failure. I didn't choose it that way, but somehow it always worked that way. When Ramon Simone, who was my first love and business partner, left to marry my secretary, I thought I would never walk again, because I was madly in love with him, and he had found me at the diner, had taken me out of my hometown, and he gave me the $1,000 to start my business. And so when he left me, I really felt like nothing. And when I finally built the courage to leave that business partnership 2 years later, which was 2 years too long, on the way out the door, he said to me, "You know, you'll never succeed without me." And I felt in my heart, through every bone in my body, that I would rather die than let him see me not succeed. And it was that insult which really became my insurance policy to continue in business no matter what was happening, because I didn't want to let that guy see me fail. When I was asked to give my first speech to a group of 300 city bankers, I was honored, but as everybody is, scared to death. When I got up there at the podium, even though I had practiced every day for 3.5 months, I memorized it, knew everything about it. I got up there, and as many people now I learn, I lost my voice. And when the moderator for the second time said thank you and asked me to sit down, I felt such a public shame, I swore I would never speak again. But the following Monday, I realized I had to get over myself, and so I volunteered to teach how to sell real estate, the only subject I knew, at the Learning Annex, which was part of NYU at that time. And I taught for 12 weeks, and as luck would have it, as I always found recovering from a failure, the very first night in class, a short Asian woman walks up to me and she says, "Babwa, you know how much money I make?" I'm like, "What? You know how much money I make?" And it was, "Do you know how much money I make?" And she proceeded to tell me she made $250,000 in 6 months. My best salesperson, I had 7 of them at the time, was making $42,000. She made $250,000 in 6 months. I had walked in and discovered the Orient Express, the woman who would become the number one salesperson in all of New York for the next 25 years and be at the head of the whole wave of the Asian population moving into New York. I would have never met Carrie Chiang at that class if I hadn't gotten over myself. I have found that failure and innovation are kissing cousins. You get one, you work on one, you automatically get the other. And I was able to make the Corcoran Group the innovator in my industry because we were so good at failure. I decided when I had my first year where I had a profit many years into the business, I had a great idea and I was going to do it, and I knew it was the greatest thing. And the great thing was I was going to take all of our apartments and put them on videotape. And now customers don't even have to look at apartments. All they have to do is pop in a videotape and they could pick out an apartment from their lazy boy chair. Oh, it was a great idea. Well, 1 month later, I'm standing in the basement of one of my shops right next to Zabar's. It's still there, in a wet basement with $77,000 of money I blew stupidly on tapes nobody wanted. And they didn't want them because I put my salespeople's faces and phone numbers on them, and they didn't want to hand them to the customer and have them call the next salesperson. So that idea was dead on arrival. And as I was starting to cry in my soup, my husband, Bill Higgins, who was a Navy captain, came home from a war exercise in South Korea, where he was blowing up the North Koreans. This is what boys do on weekends that you would pay with our tax money. Okay. And he was all excited, telling me, "Oh, my God, it was amazing." And I said, "You do it every year. What's the big deal?" And he said, "This time we did it in real time on this new thing called the Internet." And so I took all my videos, I shoved them on the Internet, I put them online, I didn't even know what online meant then, and boom, boom, within the first week I had 2 sales out of London. So I immediately registered every one of my competitors' URLs so that they would have to call me and ask for the URL. As they discovered the thing that was about to change the real estate industry as we knew it then. And can you imagine the advantage I had having a 2-year heads up and a head start on all of my competitors to horse around and discover what I could do online? I would have never discovered online if I hadn't failed with the $77,000, and that was my reward.
Wow, that's Barbara Corcoran again. She's one of the stars on the Shark Tank show, real estate mongrel up in New York City, and she's done it very big. But I love her honesty, her integrity, the failure to all failure leads to success if you're willing to take risk and if you're not just willing to lay down and be smothered and cry about it and moan about it, you get back up and you try again. Be fruitful and multiply. These are the original commandments. I wrote a book God led me 2 years ago called True Wealth by the Book. Here's the original commandments in the book of Genesis. God created man in his image. We're to take on his image and nature and character. That's what Christ brought. He brought the spirit of the law. Be fruitful and multiply, it says in the scripture. God created each of us to invest for growth, continuous learning, keep trying. Fill and subdue the earth is the next principle. Put your talents to work is what Christ has been saying to us and telling us, because he brings the spirit of the law. Finally, the last law is rule over every living creature. And that means lead by example. Get out there again, take risk. You know, use the leadership skills that you have. God gave everybody leadership skills. It doesn't mean you're going to be a CEO of a giant company, but you could be the best mom or the best dad or the best even kid for that matter by being an example. Lead by example. We need more people who are doing that from God's perspective. Again, taking risks, be fruitful. I talked about the secret to the kingdom of God is found in the parable of the sower. It's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Look it up. God said there's going to be stages of your growth and denial. Hang in there. Keep taking risks. Here's a little clip from some of the sharks talking about the emotional pits that came to them from a woman. And it shows that it's not all about money, because you can sense that they have tears in their eyes as they talk. Listen into some of this.
Tell me a little bit about you guys. What motivated you guys to want to start your own business?
I'm engaged to a... I'm engaged, and my fiance lives in Japan, and she can't come out here unless I make this happen. I could have just continued my job as a consultant, making fine money, but this is my dream.
Why can't she come here unless this works?
Yeah, why?
Because I want this to be stable, and...
You can't afford her to come here.
That's why I'm here today. It could wait, but... I mean, I'm... Oh, woe is me, like, I can't get married, but... It's like, do I have to choose between my company, my dreams, and my fiancé? She's sitting there waiting. It's been two years since I proposed to her. And at that time, I was working in consulting, and her parents approved. And now they don't approve. They think I'm crazy. And
Because you started a business?
Yeah, I think in their culture, they're a little bit more conservative in the sense that they value someone who goes 9-to-5 job or...
So culturally, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's moving, I gotta tell you.
About that. That's Mr. Wonderful saying in his brutal conversation. It's moving. You know, I got to tell you, it's about a woman again. He would have said in his other interview, there's a lot of women out there, right? Just but your business. Of course, this is a business that's not developed yet. And they were seeking capital to have it grow. He and another guy who's a partner there talking about their business and their idea and concept again. But emotional touch, that's really good. Here's an interview with Mark Cuban talking about failure is good again, because he talks about some of his own failures. This is really interesting, but considering how egotistically he appears to be lots of times on the show. Listen in.
There's a time in every entrepreneur's life when he realizes that, you know, this is his calling, or at least that he can't bring himself to work for anybody else, yeah, that he's an entrepreneur. When did that moment come for you?
I had a job out of college working for a bank for a short period of time, Mellon Bank. And I decided to, well, first, it might have been Inc. magazine. This is way back when. But there was an article about changing something in how you deduct how you save Social Security from employees' paychecks. And I literally hadn't been working there for 3 weeks. And so I sent it to the CEO of Mellon Bank. Hey, I thought you might be interested in this. Literally some guy he never heard of. And I got a note back, said thank you. And I'm thinking, okay, look, my whole job, my whole motive in taking a job working for somebody was to help them become more profitable. That's the way I always looked at it. And then I started a rookies club where I reached out to some executives and all the people who had started at the same time at Mellon Bank. We'd all go out and get a drink and we'd get this executive to start. And I didn't like run it through my boss or anything. And so my boss at the time calls me in and said, you're doing this. I said, yeah, thinking he's going to say great. He just starts screaming at me and reaming me. How could you do this? You go everything through me. You work for me. Yeah. So I knew I wasn't destined there. And then I left and I went down to ended up down in Dallas and got a job working for a company called Your Business Software. And we sold software, and I didn't know anything about software. I took one computer class at Indiana and kind of cheated to pass. But not that I condone that, but and so I had a customer, and I'd stay up all night reading. I figured, you know, computers were new, and technology was new. This technology was new, so nobody had a head start on me because it was changing so rapidly like it is today that if I just put in the time, I can learn as much as anybody else. And so I taught myself. I'd stay up late reading software manuals, taught myself different little simple programming languages, and kept on getting bigger and bigger and better and better. But it was at a retail store, and one of my responsibilities was to come in, sweep the floor, wipe down the windows, and open the store. And I had a customer who wanted me to come out there and close a deal, and it was a $15,000 deal, $1,500 commission to me. Told my boss, he said, no, you need to be there to open the store. And I made the executive decision that I was going to go get the check, because, you know, I was living six guys in a three-bedroom apartment, sleeping on the floor, and this check meant I could, like, not use the same Holiday Inn towels with holes in them that I'd stolen, you know. But anyway, so I went and picked up the check, thinking when I came back and gave the check to my boss, all would be forgiven, and, you know, the sales cures all. Fired me. And so those back-to-back experiences confirmed what I already knew. Better start my own.
But your first entrepreneurial job really was the bar at the University of Indiana.
Yep.
Motley's Pub.
Yeah. I wasn't 21. So let me take a step back. I played on the rugby team, and we would have fundraisers. We figured if we party as hard and as well as we did, we were really good at it, I figured we could make money at it too. So we'd turn into party promoters, and we'd throw these parties, and they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And we'd throw them at this one bar. And the bar was getting ready to go out of business. We were really their only source of business. And he said, well, why don't you buy it? And so I took, and this is right before my senior year. I hadn't turned 21 yet. I took my student loan money, and another buddy took some money he had, and we put that as a down payment on the bar. And we opened it up September 27th. And there was lines, because, you know, my idea of carding, you know, I wasn't 21. Well, I just turned 21 by the time we opened. My idea of carding people was like, okay, go ahead. And so there were lines everywhere, and it was the hot spot on campus until we had a wet T-shirt contest.
What happened in the wet T-shirt contest?
You don't know what happens at a wet t-shirt contest?
I don't know what happened in this.
Anybody want to explain to it? So what happened, I was carding because I knew we'd be under some scrutiny. So I literally was actually carding. And I'll never forget this person I'll get to in a second. I remember looking at her ID vividly, and it was a good ID, and thinking, okay, all good. And so the wet t-shirt contest goes off without a hitch. And the local newspaper writes an article about it, and mostly because we're a student bar and all that kind of stuff, student-run and run bar. And turns out they had taken a picture of the girls on the bar, wet, with their t-shirts on. And turns out one of the girls was 16, but she was on probation for prostitution at 16. She didn't look like it. I thought she was a junior in finance, you know. And that got us closed down. So, and you know, those are one of those, you know, kismet things. One of those things that turns out to be good for you in the long run, because otherwise, I still might be bartending and throwing wet t-shirt contests in Bloomington, Indiana.
Turned out good for him in the sense that he told him not to do that again, right? That's a good lesson. We all have done stupid things. God has grace and mercy over us, and grace periods will end also at a period of time where God says, okay, that's enough of that kind of thing. And that may have been good for Mark Cuban because it may have given him more morals and values that he may not have gotten in his home through that experience. But God has a purpose, again, using business to help us grow as individuals, as people. It's about taking risk. It's about pursuing a dream that he puts into your heart. It may not, I mean, I had four different things, dreams that I had of businesses successful before I latched onto one that really became successful. That's what God does. He's percolating. He's putting ideas in your visions, unctions. That's where the parable of the sower is so strong, because he's giving you visions of things, but you say, oh, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. Or, oh, let me try that. Oh, I can't keep doing this because the soil's not fertile enough. Or finally, the thorny soil where, oh, I can't. Let me keep trying. You know, the cares of the world come against you, and then finally get the good soil. That's where God can be the most fruitful with you, because you're more humble, open, teachable, ready to accept his thinking, his ideas for you, and his vision and purpose for you. All right, let's go to Damon John talking about some of his experiences in building his business and brand. He's got an international conglomerate, over a $2 billion company. Neat guy, too.
Well, I was growing up in the heyday of Hollis. I think it was a great time, I think, because it was that fusion. It was a middle-class neighborhood, but the kids still went out and interacted with each other, played football, played baseball on the streets, you know, stickball, whatever the case is. But then the coolness started coming around. So we started seeing this guy, Russell Simmons. He was just driving around these cars, and we would see him in papers and magazines and everything in Europe and Australia and just doing his thing. But he wasn't selling drugs. He wasn't hustling. He wasn't a pimp. He wasn't selling crack. He wasn't doing anything like that. He was slinging music. He was having a good time. You can't even say he was working, actually. So growing up in that time, it was such an energy, as well as this music that came over from the Bronx was hip-hop. And it was such a raw music. And in New York, Queens, besides Long Island, was considered the softest borough. So when the hip-hop started coming out and the kids in Queens started becoming known for it, and LL and MC Shan and all those guys, we actually felt like we had a voice. Forget even the world. We had a voice now along with all the boroughs, because we kind of adopted this music that really was coming out of the Bronx. So it was a magical time. We're riding, surprising, and often hypnotizing. We
always tell the truth, and then we never slip no lies. College obviously isn't for everybody. I was able to, you know, also get an opportunity to start my career, not going back to college. But what were some of the lessons that you had learned around the time you decided to start establishing your own path instead of going back to school?
Well, I started to realize that by not going to school that I wasn't as smart as I thought I would be. I took that, I'm going to take that year off type of decision, and all of a sudden I didn't go to college. Now you have me being a waiter. I'm 22 years old, and all those people I thought were idiots in school are now coming back from college. I'm serving them shrimp, right? So it was embarrassing, as well as that whole I'm going to be a millionaire very soon, it didn't work out like I thought. It was really hard to make a first million because I didn't make it for many, many years to come. I was buying these, you know, it was kind of the in thing to buy crash cars, go and get them fixed up and resell them. And I just, you know, the math with me was no problem. I'll buy 50 of them. I'll make a profit of X amount of dollars and I'll be a millionaire next week. Well, didn't work out like that. And I was serving all my high school friends shrimp and Red Lobster when they were coming back from college. So it was embarrassing. And I think that what changed my life wasn't the fact that I wanted to become a millionaire. What changed my life was the fact that I wanted to make these clothes for myself, for other people, because nobody respected this market. I was doing something I loved, and then all of a sudden it started to take off.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, once that passion finally, you know, caught on, you know, and you finally decided, you know, this is something that I want to move forward with, and a little bit about that first product and how it kind of all took off from there. And then did you ever decide, you know, at that point it was like no slowing you down, right?
Yeah, well, you know, when that passion, when that thing grabs a hold of you, and as they say, when the needle is finally in the vein and you're really hooked, it's like being in love. It's like, you know, you thought you liked somebody when you were 13, 14 years old, and, you know, that was just something new and it was puppy love. But when you're 22, 23 years old, and you're out there sitting there making life decisions and saying, I can see myself with this person for the rest of my life, and you're getting butterflies every time you see him. That's what it is when you have a business and you have a company that you love. You can't see anything else. And, you know, I would have dressed people till today for free if I could. And I'm sure you hear that from everybody else. You know, an artist will rap and sing, you know, anytime they can be seen. And just like the kids in school who always got kicked out in special ed who are comedians, they can't help it. They know that that's the biggest bully in the schoolyard, and they can't help it but crack a joke, even though they're going to get their head cracked open, but they just love what they're doing. And that's just how it was as a business. You know, I fell in love with FUBU when I saw that first person walking down the street with my product on.
FUBU. FUBU.
Developing a sexual product is one thing, but creating a lasting brand legacy is completely a different beast in its own. What core values do you maintain from your early days at FUBU in your new ventures?
You know, I think that there's four levels that any brand or product can go through. They won't all hit the four levels. So you can have an item, you know, and that item is, all right, I'm making bottle, there's water. Water can be getting anywhere from the fountain to the stream, or you put in a bottle. You can then have a label. You put any label on there because you go into the store and you say, well, that's bottled water. I don't know the label's name per se. Then you have more of a brand, Dasani. It's a brand. We don't know much about it, but then you can become a lifestyle, Avion, vitamin water. You know, so a lot of us don't get to the level of lifestyle where if you copy a piece of paper, somebody may say, go Xerox it, when really Xerox is a company. Or you ask for a soda and somebody calls it a Coke, where it basically categorizes everything. You search for something, they say Google it, no matter how you're searching, and that becomes a lifestyle. It's a challenge to go through those processes. And what I do with all my companies is I say to them that the easiest thing to sell in the world is the truth. You know, back in the days, it was, you know, make it, they will come, and we can put some lipstick on a pig and dress it up. With this world of transparency today, you can create the biggest lie campaign that you like, but one person at your office can send out a tweet and say it's all garbage. And
hip hop influenced him a lot, of course, and it became the future of rap. A lot of things there in New York City that happened, but God can put a passion on your heart, my heart. And he has a dream, has a vision. That's what he wants to do. He wants to move the world forward. He's going to use anyone that will be open, is willing to take risks, overcome failure, because you're going to go through failure. That is part of the plan. John Beaner with Inspiration 316. Look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 show with John Beaner. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book, visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.